First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, 1 mile south of I-295. Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these 3 stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on Let's Face the Issues. We're talking about an issue today that I believe should be in the very focal point, listening, looking, and deciding as citizens what we should do. Asking the question today, who's in charge? Are the judges, the federal judges by the thousands across America? Does a single federal judge sitting at a single office in a single state in a single city across America, does that federal judge have the authority to overrule the executive branch, i.e. our president? I'm looking at a headline that says, no judge rules the executive branch. The Constitution crushes the myth of judicial supremacy. In this article, I'm going to read this paragraph, and then Greg is still with us. I'm going to ask him to respond to it. The Constitution does not create 3 equal branches of government. It creates 3 distinct branches, each supreme within its own sphere. The executive branch is not a mere administrative errand boy of the federal judiciary. It is a co-equal power, and in many ways, given its unitary and energetic structure, was designed to be the most vigorous defender of the people's liberty against both the legislative overreach and judicial arrogance. But today, thanks to a lethal combination of legal ignorance, civil apathy, and judicial hubris, we've come to believe that any robed oligarch sitting on a federal bench can simply wave a gavel and paralyze the presidency. This is constitutional heresy, end quote. Greg, I'm thankful that you're able to take a moment or two. How do you respond to that? Explain to our listeners, I believe many need to hear this, explain to our listeners what we're talking about, 3 co-equal branches with the tension between them, and who has the final authority. Just go through that little governance, civil government overview for us.
Well, you've got Articles 1, 2, and 3, and Article 1 deals with the legislative branch, the House and the Senate, and we could step back in time and do a full disambiguation. However, you know, things have changed, and since the year 1913 and the creation of the 16th and 17th Amendments, that bicameral legislature that used to represent the people on the people's House of Representatives and the states through the Senate no longer does that. Now we have a bicameral legislature that's duplicative in that both are chosen by the majorities in their state and their jurisdictions. So, and we could go into a long dialogue on just the Article 1, Article 2. Deals with the President of the United States, the chief executive, and of course within Articles 2, you'll find that the President, when he's sworn in, swears to support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution in Article 2 requires that he faithfully execute the laws. So what we're talking about with some of this is faithfully executing the laws. side note, sidebar, I must tell you that one of the worst offenders on not faithfully executing the laws was Barack Hussein Obama, that entered office and said that he would, on DACA, not enforce the law. And there was another element dealing with marriage between one man and one woman, and he said that he would not enforce that law. And you go, so you pick the laws that you don't want to enforce, and all of a sudden, you know, it's caused absolute havoc within our system. Of course, by the way, when a case goes to court and one of the parties doesn't show up, you know, plaintiff or defendant doesn't show up, typically the party that doesn't show up, they lose their case because it's an adversarial system. And adversaries, you know, go in and they do battle in court in order to find out what's right, what's just. Article 3 deals with the judiciary. And the judiciary makes these, you know, clearly makes these decisions where our facts, you know, our struggles are between states or between the states and the Fed or between people of two separate states or where constitutional rights are at issue. And each one kind of has a check on the other. You know, with the judiciary, you know, most of those federal appointments are, you know, people say lifetime, where they're lifetime during good conduct. Okay, what's good conduct, folks? What's good conduct? Who's the check? If there's checks and balances, who is the check on the judiciary? I don't think that question's been answered in a long time. I think we've not seen the impeachments we ought to see within the judiciary. And today, the major battle is if that judge, a federal judge, can order the presidency, does he then have the power of the presidency but not have the responsibility associated therewith? Can he order us into bankruptcy and then say, Mr. President, it's your fault? When we do go off the cliff financially, when all of a sudden we have a U.S. Treasury auction, by the way, folks, in order to issue debt, we have to sell that debt. Understand? We sell bills, bonds, and notes, the Treasury does, in order to issue debt for us to print more money to pay our bills. Folks, every single year, except for one, in the past 40 years, every single year, we borrow money to pay our bills. We are technically bankrupt as a nation. None of you would loan money to yourself or to a friend that has the books the way our books are. We're $227 trillion in unfunded liability. That's $667,000 for every single one of you not listening, every single one of you that happens to be a citizen in the United States. That's over $500,000 that you owe. I guess if you can whip out the checkbook and pay. And a lot of people go, well, we'll just make those billionaires pay their fair share. I've got a few questions on that. What's their fair share? And once you say, hey, we're going to take half your wealth, understand billionaires are mobile. They can live anywhere in the world they want to live. I want you to try to seize their money. By the way, your millionaires and billionaires are paying much more than their fair share. They carry the burden. What happens if we're getting to that teetering point now where over 50% of our population is on the dole? They take more than they give. I think it was Alexander Fraser Tytler that said a democracy can only survive until the people determine that they can vote for themselves monies from the general treasury, and then it will bankrupt itself. If you want to call in and challenge me on that, we'll talk about it. But that's about the way that language was used. We are there, folks. We have people that have voted to get stuff for free. We have 70 million people today on disability. How many more can you carry? How many more people can ride in the boat? If we import another 20 million, and that's about the number we're at today, about 20 million people that are here that ought not to be here. They didn't come in here by lawful means. They came in here and said, hey, we're coming in here as a refugee. And when their cases are heard, about 90% of those, they're not legit refugees. Tons of them don't even show up in court. How many of those folks can we carry? Along with the folks that are here, that were born here, raised here, how many folks can we carry as a nation and continue to pay this bill? With 35, 36, 37 trillion, that number doesn't even matter anymore. If the interest rates today hit half of what they were in 1981 on our bills, bonds, and notes, that's our treasury debt. If it hits half, by the way, it apexed at 16.26%. So if we were at 8% today, all the revenue to our federal treasury, every money, every bit of money that we could take in would barely pay the interest on our debt. Not fund Social Security, not fund Medicare, not fund our military, not fund the federal government, not fund the parks and recreation, all these things that we're so concerned about today. It couldn't cover just the interest on the debt. It would barely cover. So you folks decide what you want. You want 10 cents on the dollar out of your Social Security? Do you want no military? Well, that wouldn't last very long. What do you want? Because we're bankrupt. We're going off the cliff. And for the first time in my lifetime, we have a president that says, I'm going to do something about it. And he's being fought tooth and nail by your liberal leftist Democrats and leftist, absolute leftist radical judges in this country. We got a constitutional crisis. It's coming to an apex. It's coming to a head right now.
I'm thankful for those statistical data, facts that you've given us. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is Greg, one of our four sons. Greg resides up in the southern tip of heaven. Greg, what is your weather like up there today?
I tell you what, it's absolutely astoundingly beautiful in the southern tip of heaven. Every time I go back and to from the home office to the church office, I'm staring at the beautiful mountains of East Tennessee. There's just nothing else like it on earth. I love it. But if you happen to be a leftist from California, I just want to let you know we have big old spiders here and big old snakes and critters. You don't even want, so you probably don't want to come. I love our refugees from California, our refugees from Washington and Oregon and New York. Refugees come from all over the earth, and a whole bunch of them are coming to Tennessee.
I understand that. Greg, I've got two or three questions I'm going to combine and let you respond, and then we'll let you get back to your ministry work that I know is pressing even today. One of the things that we see taking place is the runaway cost factors where through the Biden administration, they had loaded the books. Some say they had burned the books, or what is the term that's used? They have simply lied on the books where billions of dollars were put out. $7 billion, for example, went to Stacey Abrams in Georgia, and she's already admitted that it was given to voters in Georgia for their vote. They did it by backdoor approach. They bought new appliances, ranges, ovens, refrigerators, et cetera, and gave to families, and that caused the ingratiation so that they would vote then for Joe Biden, or in that case, Kamala Harris. So two things. With all of the funding that now the judges are saying that President Trump cannot claw back, that he must allow it to be spent, then how does that stand with their order? Secondly, with the illegal invaders that's coming in, especially now with the uprising across America because of Muhammad Khalil, the one that is now in jail waiting for trial, how should the president respond? I'm going to read this portion of this article, then let you respond to it. No federal judge, not even the entire Supreme Court, can legally issue a binding directive to the executive officer contrary to the president's lawful order. That would violate the structural principle of separation of powers. If an executive officer disobeys the president in favor of a court's injunction, he is insubordinate, not obedient. Further, the article says, nowhere in Article 3 is the federal judiciary given superior authority over the executive branch. The courts have one core function, to decide cases and controversies promptly before them. They don't rule the government. They interpret law in the context of specific disputes between parties. That's it. That's all. Closing statement in this article. Judicial orders have no power unless they're backed by execution. But who executes the federal orders? The executive branch? If a court order contradicts an executive order within the president's lawful domain, who prevails? Constitutionally, the answer is obvious. The executive. Because the judge has neither sword nor authority to wield it, according to Alexander Hamilton. So the question is boiled down this way. Here are the federal judges that keep trying to insert themselves and becoming the executive branch power over the president and saying you cannot stop the spending, you cannot claw back the funds, and secondly, you cannot do anything about the exportation or the removal of the illegal invaders that's harming America. Now, with those two things and with the executive orders have been carried out by President Trump with over 100 suits being filed. Who wins? Should President Trump, should the executive office obey the federal judges or even if a Supreme Court gives an opinion, should the president, can the president, will the president simply say that's your opinion, that's not mine? How say you?
Yeah. Well, it's a sticky wicket because they dare not try to usurp the role of executive, chief executive, president of the United States, commander in chief. That's dangerous ground to tread on. It has been for a couple hundred years. Early 1800s, you had Marbury versus Madison. They're going to start talking about this, I imagine, because Marbury sued Madison. He was given a judicial appointment by outgoing President Adams, and all this paperwork's in the works, and it didn't get handed over in time, so he didn't get his appointment. And this sounds like a Merrick Garland thing, right? Merrick Garland, he thought he was going to be a Supreme Court justice, but he didn't get his hearing in time, so he didn't become a Supreme Court justice, so he became a radical attorney general for the left. He was going to pay the president back. So Marbury versus Madison ended with the judges saying, we've got the right to judicial review, but they did not issue a writ of mandamus. A writ of mandamus would have said, President Madison, you're going to have to give this fellow his judgeship. I'll go back and look at it. I mean, it's an interesting case, and I'm sure there are going to be some brilliant legal minds that say, "Hey, Greg, you just don't know what you're talking about." But y'all look at it. You tell me if I know what I'm talking about. He didn't get his writ of mandamus. He didn't get his judge's spot because the paperwork didn't get processed. It's kind of like this airplane didn't get turned around midair to obey this judge. That's what I understand the case was. Airplane midair. He orders, "Hey, you turn it around." It's not going to happen. It's already outside our airspace. What if it was inside of our airspace? What if it hadn't taken off yet? What if it, mm-hmm. How far can a judge order that a president do something? And then the other question again: who is the check? We've got a system of checks and balances. Who's the check on that judiciary? Is it not the president? Is it not the Senate? Is it not the legislature? Somebody's going to have to do a check on that judicial branch. They fought years and years back when they didn't have their own chambers, when they were meeting in Senate chambers. You should go back and look at that. They said, "Hey, we just won't give you guys a place to meet." Now, of course, they have their own court, their own building, but they are not completely autonomous. They are not completely independent. It's just like the bureaucracy working under the executive. You had agents within this bureaucracy that told Elon Musk and the Doge crew, "You can't come in here," even though the president had ordered that it be done. And of course, they suspended some of those and fired some of those. They called themselves autonomous, separate, basically without governing authority. And you go, if they're not answerable to the president, who are they answerable to? We've got problems, folks. If the judiciary is not answerable, if the CIA, FBI, NSA, if they're not answerable, folks, it's a scary situation. Can happen real, real quick. That's why I say constitutional crisis is we're right here. We're in the middle of it. You're watching it play out in real time. Folks, keep your eyes open on what's going on in the world, but bow your head and pray that the Lord would preserve this once great nation, restore this once great nation, because it's going off a cliff really, really fast, and you have a lot of folks on the left that want to see it happen while a Republican happens to reside in the White House, because then they point the fingers. I mean, understand Chuck Schumer last week decided he was going to vote for cloture. Have to have 60 votes in the Senate for cloture to end debate and go to a regular vote that only requires a 50 plus one. And he said he's going to vote for cloture so that we wouldn't have a government shutdown. You know why he did that? Because in a government shutdown, then the chief executive has absolute unquestioned authority to determine where the absolute necessities are, in which case you send 99% of the workforce home. By the way, if they did that at the federal level, 99% of you would never, ever know. Do you understand? That's how big our federal government has gotten.
Absolutely. So, Greg, with that being said, here's my angst, if you please. Why the silence from so many Christians? Why is it that we find so many Christians, conservatives, and patriots today – that is saying Trump must obey the courts. Trump must be obedient to what the judges say. Trump is out of line. Trump cannot claw back those dollars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You'd be surprised how many people I talk with personally that believe that Trump is wrong, the courts are right, and therefore the courts are to control the presidency, and that he should just simply bow and bend and say yes, sir, to the courts. So what are your words to our conservative Christian patriots that may be listening today?
Listen, where you know the truth, you need to speak the truth. Speak the truth in love, the scripture says. In this particular case, there's a moral imperative, and I think at the core of that moral imperative, hate for money to be part of it, we're bankrupt. We're not just bankrupt ourselves. We're bankrupting future generations. Bankruptcy is a kind of slavery. When you say, hey, I'm not going to give you the assets, I'm going to give you the bills. Assets are already spent. I've already spent them in my Social Security. I've already spent them in overseas fiascos. I've already spent them in gay and lesbian studies in some foreign nation or Sesame Street for the Afghanis. I've already spent that money. Now, grandchild, I want you to pay it. There's a moral catastrophe facing us. It's not just the catastrophe of all of the sexual sins and perversion of the culture, the murder of 67 million babies. It's not just the embrace of all things evil in the culture. It's also to say, next generation, you get to pay the price. We're going to sow to the wind, and you get to reap the whirlwind. There's a moral imperative. So believers, you can stand now and speak the truth now in love, or your children will pay the price for your indifference.
Absolutely. Well said. Greg, I must do this. There's a final question that I have on my mind. I'm looking at article after article after article about Joe Biden and the auto pen, where it's questioned as to whether or not he signed anything, or if those movers and shakers behind the scenes that were actually controlling the Oval Office, if they signed it via the auto pen. Does that make those executive orders or bills that he signed, does that void them? Are they vacuous and void, or are they enforceable? What are your thoughts on that?
My goodness, it's calamity. It's chaos. This is the same kind of question. If you step back in time, 4 years ago, Donald Trump said, hey, the 2020 election was stolen. We have dozens and dozens of cases were spawned one after another. They struck the case down, literally would not hear the case on the basis that there was no standing. So you brought this case, and you brought it too early. Therefore, it's premature. You brought it too late. Therefore, it's time limited out. Or you don't have standing to bring this case before the court. So they threw out case after case after case, not hearing the case on the merits, but just threw them out. And people said, you know, he's trying to overturn the will of the electorate. You go, no. I want you to think about it from this perspective for just a moment. If the president of the United States sees something he sees illegal, unlawful, it's literally had a major negative effect, and he doesn't try to do something about it, then he has not faithfully executed the laws.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to, as president of the United States, he had to say something, do something, challenge what he saw, what I believe was an unlawful election. And matter of fact, the numbers in this most recent election kind of tell the tale. 81 million people didn't show up to vote for Joe Biden, okay? And the California election tells you something. When it takes them 2 months to count votes, that tells you something's going on in California, folks. So questions ought to be had. In this case, questions ought to be had. I want to sit Joe Biden down and have a deposition and ask Joe Biden, did you sign this executive order? And state the premise of the executive order, the summary of the executive order, the number of the did you sign this? And ask him one after another after another. And if he doesn't know that he signed it, somebody else did. In which case, if we find out who that person is, they belong in the federal penitentiary, and probably worse, because the office of the presidency of the United States, the chief executive, is bound up in a single human being. Read your Constitution. Underlings have no authority other than that authority given them by that chief executive. Did you know that, folks? We have a judiciary that has a whole bunch of people in it. We have a legislature that has 435 people in it, 535 if you count the Senate. But the executive, that Article 2 is bound up in one person, not a bureaucracy. It's bound up in one person. And that's why so many of these executive orders that are being fought, they're lawful. They're right constitutionally. they're being fought because they want to hamstring this president and run the clock out. That's why. Understand, the left has for years pushed through things that they cut way past the fringe. They cut way past the boundaries of the Constitution, and nobody did an ever-loving thing. And today we're paying the price for that with the debt that we've incurred, with the chaos that we've endured.
Absolutely.
Today, the Department of Justice and the presidency need to stand clearly that anything that was signed by Otto Finn that the former president is not aware of is unlawful and should be undone.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I'll add is a footnote to that, ladies and gentlemen. According to the scripture, God created civil government. We call it politics today, the politicians. God created it. God created civil government for as a servant unto God. And in that servanthood unto God through civil government, it's designed, the civil government is designed to prosecute evil and to protect good. If the government today is not on track with prosecuting evil and protecting good and obedient to the Constitution of our nation, ladies and gentlemen, we need to, as Peter of old, Acts 5:29, we ought to obey God rather than man. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm thankful for Greg and for his knowledge of the Word and his ministry in reaching people with the gospel, but also I'm thankful for his knowledge in relationship to civil government. He has his credentials through Conservative Theological University, and that's in ecclesiastical jurisprudence. That means ecclesiology, that is the church, and in jurisprudence, that is in the law. And I'm thankful for what God has done in the years, even after his completing of his credentials, of what he is knowledgeable of and experienced in and carried out in ecclesiastical jurisprudence. Greg, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. And as I tell people each and every day, we need to keep looking up because our redemption draweth nigh. Have a blessed day in the southern tip of heaven, Greg.
Amen.
Thank you
what
so much. God,
thank you.
Thank you. God bless you. We love you. Ladies and gentlemen, that telephone number in the last few moments is 904-831-0917, 904-831-0917. And may I say again, the president has the responsibility in carrying out his office of presidency to protect us from graft, to protect us from any invasion into our nation. And when we look at an article that says Biden's green giveaway, what happened to $20 billion quickly dispersed? Another headline, how the White House ignored a judge's order to turn back from the deportation of some of the illegal invaders. Another headline says, war erupts over local judges nullifying Trump's decisions. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm thankful that God has divinely intervened, placed Donald J. Trump as the 47th president, and that he is protecting him, giving him wisdom and a spine, a backbone, to take a stand for our Constitution and our liberties each and every day. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295, FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with First Conservative Baptist Church. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Tune in tonight at 11 for a replay of today's Let's Face the Issues broadcast on WBOB AM 600 and 101.1 FM.
I'm Ruth Kramer with Mission Network News. On Tuesday, militants from the Baloch Liberation Army in Pakistan hijacked a passenger train and took over 400.